From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of May, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. The folks from the Andersons have agreed to join us right here in Champaign County to take a look at the cash grain market as we made our way through that long Memorial Day weekend. We'll hear about crop conditions in our area as well from them. And then we'll take a broader look at the weather forecast across the United States. That with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And along the way, I'll update you on all the ag news for this Tuesday afternoon. It all comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
So you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's the 30th day of May, a Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana now joins us. Hey, Wayne, thanks for being with us for the day.
Glad to be here, Todd.
So the question on everybody's mind is not why corn went down, I suppose, but why soybeans managed to tumble so far.
Well, I think, you know, we're going to be looking at the report this afternoon. They look for 64% of the beans to be planted. They're seeming to think we're going to have a good crop rating, 66 to 68% on the corn. And we saw a little drier weekend than what we were expecting. We were expecting a little more rain over the Eastern Belt. Some areas really got pounded, Fountain County, up around Frankfort, Indiana, and like that hit hard. Crawfordsville got hit hard with a storm Friday night. Fortunately, I live a few miles south of town and wasn't bad at our house, but a lot of the damage that way. But all in all, they think that planting's going ahead. They think that, you know, China's been out for a holiday, and they won't be back until tomorrow. And we did have a bean sale announcement even as it was, but basically the glut of world supply and the funds coming back in today just to continue to sell again today with the weather forecast being a little less wet.
So expectations are not bad conditions, normal crop year, and we're back to the amount of supply that's on hand, not only in the United States, but around the planet then.
You know, that's what they're really looking at and pushing here like that. I think that there's still an awful lot of weather to go. You know, as we watch some of them, we're seeing some dry areas develop in the Dakotas, parts of Minnesota and Nebraska that way. They're not problems as of yet, but there's still a lot to go. I talked to one individual today. He's still got the seed corn company was just out and walked the fields. He's got by Frankfort. He's going to have over 1,000 acres of corn to replant. We know of lots of acres of beans that are going to be replanted here in our area. We're just waiting to get back in the field.
So, and these won't actually be picked up, I don't think, or may. Well, I suppose they probably will in the weekly numbers because they ask how much you have left to plant, not whether you're replanting. So if as long as the farmer says he's got it left to plant, I suppose that's what will happen, right?
Well, in general, once it's been planted, once they consider that planted and stays that way, that's the way it works for crop insurance and everything along the way. So I don't think they're saying replant and count it into that. It's one of the, and they maybe can, depending on how they do it, but in most cases, they don't go back that way, go backwards.
But I'll call USDA and ask because and see whether that's the case. Because my gut tells me that what they ask is how much do you have left to plant? And it's not based on, for instance, that would change, I think, Wayne, if you were thinking about it as it relates to the acreage numbers that come out in March. Those numbers, of course, we know change. And so the farmers wouldn't be making the decision or telling them based on the numbers that they have in March how much they have left to plant. They'd be saying, well, I'm going to add 60 acres or take 60 acres out. So, well, anyway, I'll call and find out and see what those numbers really look like. And then it'll be Indiana and Ohio that we need to pay attention to.
Yes. There's 1.7 million acres in Canada that are probably going to be left idle because of the cold weather and inability to get planted in time up there, too. So that's going to hang out, you know, and we're probably going to see a half to a million acres of corn lost in the U.S. because of getting past late planting date in some areas before they get it replanted.
What else have we been watching in the marketplace?
Well, of course, you look today and there was everything was down, the dollar, crude, oil, in corn, beans, and wheat, and we just saw a lot of people going. The other thing we're looking at is South America, and Brazilian farmers have basically cut off selling here for now. Brazil, we're cheaper on beans in the export market than they are. Argentina's coming in a little bit below us, but we are still beating the Brazilian farmers as far as price on corn and beans right now. We had some good export numbers today, both on the high end of the expectations and continuing to flow along real well. There's some good things going on out there, but it sure didn't look like when we looked at the board.
And livestock, anything there?
Livestock, you know, we were down earlier in the day than the cattle on feed report from last week. We ended up, closing higher on the day in the cattle. The cattle market continues to roll along pretty well. I would think that we'd be getting toppy here now and maybe seeing a little bit of a setback here pretty soon.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. I checked with the United States Department of Agriculture. Lance Honig from USDA's NASS Washington, D.C. office tells us that the weekly crop progress report does pick up some of the replant when it's put out each week. So those numbers don't pick it up directly, but of course it's reported by farmers sometimes that way. And so there is some of that adjustment already made in the weekly numbers. In today's agricultural news, Sonny Perdue is entering his second month on the job as the Secretary of Agriculture for the United States, and there are a few key things he'll need to focus on this month. Top of the list, President Donald Trump's Task Force on Agriculture and Rural Prosperity. Perdue and other government officials have until October to craft a report and recommendations for legislative, regulatory, or policy changes that will ease the burdens on farmers and help rural America prosper. And it seems the process is getting started. White House Agriculture Liaison Ray Starling told a meeting of organic farmers and producers last Wednesday that the task force first meeting would take place in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Well, USDA has just 14 months left to propose and make final its requirements for disclosing GMO ingredients in food products, a period that is on the short end for the rulemaking process. Congress set a July 2018 deadline for the rules, and then Secretary Tom Vilsack had his staff plowing ahead on the measure. A pre-rulemaking notice, effectively a list of questions to stakeholders about what they would like to see in the rule, got as far as the White House Office of Management and Budget, but was never released due to the change in administration. USDA has since been quiet on the rules, though a study required by Congress on the feasibility of online labeling is underway and set to be done this summer. Meanwhile, comments on how USDA should update its rules for approving biotech products are due the 19th of June. The department needs to sign off on crops and other products that pose a plant pest risk. Many of the crops on the market have been altered with the use of agrobacterium, which triggers the requirement. But crop developers want the rules clarified to only mandate approvals of plants that pose a risk to the environment and human health, and not because they've been genetically modified. The Obama administration proposed changes to the current rule in the days before President Trump took office, and it is one of the few proposals that could have staying power with the new White House. Well, you know, there are about a dozen senior officials at USDA who still need to be named and confirmed by the Senate, in addition to about 200 other political appointees, all of whom will have roles to play as Perdue pushes ahead with plans to roll back regulations and focus on customer service. No announcements have been made on this front, but several sources have said the secretary has made his picks for key positions, including the deputy secretary and several undersecretaries. And Perdue hinted to reporters late last week that he's already decided on who will fill the new assistant to the secretary rural development slot. Several nominees could be named yet this month, and the sooner the better for Perdue as he looks to get started on his priority list. Well, we'll stay in Washington, D.C., where Representative Rick Crawford will propose a new version of his bill to allow financing of U.S. agricultural exports to Cuba, a development that comes after 10 months of negotiations between the Arkansas Republican and members of Florida's congressional delegation who opposed the measure. The updated bill, known as the Cuba Agricultural Exports Act, would impose a 2% transaction fee on all agricultural sales to Cuba and direct the revenue to the thousands of U.S. companies and citizens that have certified claims of property confiscated by the Cuban government worth some $8 billion in total. However, Mike Strain, who's the president of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture and Louisiana's Commissioner of Agriculture and Forestry, says the House bill contains some restrictions on the funding.
The bill proposes to remove restrictions on the financing exports of food, dairy products, and other agricultural products to Cuba. Under current policy, it is legal to export these products, but they have to be paid in cash, and it's not possible to offer credit to Havana. The bill would authorize only private credit. It would be supported and is supported by Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue, according to his testimony before a House Committee on Agriculture. And so, of course, there's still a lot more to go on this bill. So we're working again. We've been working now for a number of years to lift that embargo.
The bill also stipulates U.S. exporters will be able to sell food and other agricultural products to Cuban buyers on credit, something not currently permitted as long as sales don't benefit the country's Communist Party or military. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The Closing Market Report is a co-production of Illinois Public Media and University of Illinois Extension. It's public radio for the farming world. Well, farmers are heading to the field again, this time with machinery used to control weeds. The post-emergence herbicide labels they'll be following usually allow applications to be made at various growth stages, says University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager. He says it's really important to read the label, making sure to get the height or stage, maybe both, of the crop correct. Well, this is because most all of the products for corn have a growth stage listed on the label, beyond which applications, at least broadcast applications, should not be made. It's usually either plant height, measured at the highest arch of the uppermost leaf, at least 50% out of the whorl, or a leaf number. Hager says if both are listed, then it's important to use the most restrictive of the two.
For example, some of the weather conditions that we've had across a pretty large part of the state this year, we may have corn plants that typically are older than what their height would suggest that they are. Now, by counting the leaf collars or the leaf collar method, that's typically a better measurement of actually to accurately stage the development of the corn plant, and typically that's a better way to follow in terms of the label statements. If you can either do the counting of the leaf collars or the height, usually the leaf collar method is going to be a better determinant of the actual stage of that corn plant.
Well, corn plants under stress conditions may be more prone to injury from post-emergence herbicides. Well, on that note, Hager says farmers should be sure to consult the product label when selecting spray additives. Many labels suggest changing from one type of additive to another when the corn crop is stressed. Also, trying to save a trip across the field by applying a post-emergence corn herbicide with liquid nitrogen as the carrier, that's not advisable. The Ovi weed scientist says while applying high rates of UAN by itself can cause corn injury, adding a post-emergence herbicide can make it worse. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. And now for something completely different and consumer-related. You know, if you plan to grill out this summer, maybe some hot dogs or chicken, you'll find both of those at lower prices than you did last summer. Gary Crawford has more.
For those of us who love to cook meat on the grill, this could be yes, meat prices are lower than this time last year, according to USDA economist Anne Marie Coons. She says choice boneless round steak is down from a year ago by 45 cents a pound, hamburger by 27 cents, pork chops 33 cents. Next,
hot dog!
Prices for frankfurters are also down. One of the largest decreases year to year.
Last summer, we paid an average $3.44 a pound for frankfurters.
And that price is down to $2.96, so a savings of 48 cents.
And, of course, what would grilling be without
barbecue chicken?
Coon says whole chickens last year cost an average $1.50 a pound.
So that's down to $1.44 per pound. So there we have a savings of 6 cents per pound. And then finally, chicken legs,
which last year cost about $1.57 a pound.
But we're now paying around $1.49 per pound. So a savings of 8 cents.
And this isn't counting summer meat specials that supermarkets will be running all summer. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Oh, Gary must have had too much time on his hand for the Memorial Day weekend. He, of course, works for the United States Department of Agriculture. He's based in Washington, D.C., right there in the Witten Building and the rest of the facilities that make up the USDA. Our thanks to Gary and USDA for that quick update. Every Tuesday, we take a look at the agricultural energies. Kansas State University's Dan O'Brien is now here to discuss what he's been researching as it relates to ethanol and biodiesel. Hey, Dan, thanks for being with us. What do you have for us this week?
Well, we've been going up and down in terms of ethanol profitability for about, basically since the first of the year. We've had, at least by our calculations, about five now out of 6 months where we've lost about 5 to 10 cents per gallon. Now, in April, the numbers worked out to where ethanol plants made 5, 10 to 15 cents per gallon, probably 10 to 15 cents a gallon. Here in May, again, now with the way ethanol prices have moved, and as well as corn prices, we've got a break even per gallon of ethanol produced of about $1.52, and the ethanol price during this month having dropped off by about 10 cents down to $1.42. So we're losing 9 to 10 cents a gallon of ethanol produced. Still, that's not equivalent to the worst of times that we'd seen back in 2012-13 when we were losing 20 and 30 cents. But for the sake of using corn up, that we have in such quantity, it would we're definitely more comfortable when we see profitability there. On the biodiesel side, actually, we've got kind of a different tale. The last couple weeks in April and now again in May, at least by our calculations, it looks like we've made about 14 cents a gallon of biodiesel produced. Again, the actual price of biodiesel sales about $3.20. The cost about $3.06. So that's a positive. And of course, we also have large stockpiles of soybeans in the U.S. So anything that can help us to see profitable processing and to move through, to work our way through those piles is all to the good.
So what is it within the ethanol pipeline that has caused the change from profit to loss?
Well, I think the price of corn has been moving about 340, 341, 342, been moving sideways of late. Distillers grains been moving to the low side. So our, as far as the inputs, they've been pretty level as corn prices have basically been moving to the sideways. But the weakening in distillers grains prices, and in particular the lowering of the price of ethanol, again, it's not as if we lost half the value of it or anything, but on the margin in terms of where that industry operates, when you lose 5 to 10 cents per gallon off the price of ethanol, well, gosh, that shows up in terms of the types of losses that we're seeing. So we went from basically a situation to where we were making 10 or so cents per gallon in April, and now, at least by our preliminary May calculations, with the drop off of about a dime in ethanol prices, well, now we're losing about that much in terms of the overall plants. Still, plant numbers have been very steady, at least by the renewable fuel standard numbers. So it, you know, again, even on the short run, it looks like for these average to a little bit better than average plants, it looks like we're seeing a downturn on the profitability side. Still, we're seeing no evidence yet that plants are shutting or anything along those lines. And really, right now, and with the anticipation of at least a decent corn crop coming in again, and as well, you know, we have our problems in the West. You have your problems in the Eastern Corn Belt, Todd. If a large crop comes, that's probably going to be profitable for ethanol production.
Dan O'Brien is with Kansas State Extension. He joins us here on a Tuesday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural energies. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon, the 30th day of May. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, can you recap the Memorial Day weekend and the rainfalls that we did or did not have in the United States? And then take a look forward for me, please.
Well, I think what we had over the holiday weekend is something that was really not unusual, very typical. We had a smattering of a little bit of everything, but also some wet weather across the nation's midsection with shower and thunderstorm activity. And May, for most of the nation, from the Rockies east, is going to end up with a cooler than normal month. And some of that coolness lingered. Now, as we look through the last couple of days of this month and into early June, some of those same trends are going to continue in the sense that we still are putting summer on hold, at least in terms of really warm weather for the Corn Belt and the Midwest. We're still going to see a pattern that's going to favor systems coming through that'll give us frequent chances for showers and thunderstorms and keep our temperatures just a little below average, nothing extreme. But for those of you wanting to jumpstart into summer, well, the warmer weather is going to be found in the western states. The Midwest is going to stay a bit cooler.
Will that warmer weather eventually make its way into the Midwest? And if so, about what time of the month of June?
Well, it will, but it may not be till after the 10th of the month. I think by then we're going to see more of a west-east pattern across the United States where warm air that builds up in the desert states and also down to our south in the Gulf Coast is able to come more north and eastward. We still have a really active jet stream pattern that is continuing to push in from the Pacific Northwest and Canada and keep us from really establishing what we call the summertime high. I think there's about another week or so, another week to 10 days of this. Then after that, we should ease into summer a little more quickly.
You mentioned that there will be periodic rains. Farmers would like to finish up planting of soybeans, maybe some corn acres still left out there. And they're in the midst of spraying, so I suppose winds under 15 miles an hour, but actually still moving, are worthwhile. What do you see in the way of open field conditions?
Well, I think we'll definitely have to be concerned about some of those higher winds as these frontal systems come through. But overall, doesn't look terribly windy in the areas that are going to be the most active. This would mean the most rain and the best chance for the winds being a concern would be across the central and southwest areas of the Corn Belt. Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, portions of Nebraska look to be the areas that will be the most wet and the most active.
And thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don Days with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming does join us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Look us up online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. WillAg.org is the website. You can find us in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and my favorite way in the NPR One app. It's all about service to producers and farmers and those interested in agriculture. The Closing Market Report, public radio for the farming world from Illinois Public Media.